This is Andrew the Authority backstage here at SUNY Brockport with the Cash Man and with J.Lew, and we are very proud and very honored to have one of the most popular and recognizable names in the history of wrestling here with us right now, the former WWF champion, known back then as the Ultimate Warrior. He is now simply Warrior. And Warrior, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Thanks for making the time to come here this evening.
One of the things I was looking back at your career, I was amazed at, and tell me if this is true or not, you were trained by Red Bastien, and you literally got your first match 3 weeks after you started training. Is that true?
Yeah, we had about 10 hours of training. That was it. And we'd sent some flyers out, started over in Jarrett's territory, Mid-Southern. And I think we probably had about 10 hours of training. That was it. Learned how to bump a little bit, you know, throw one another around a little bit, and got a call about getting started and took off.
And it was with Jerry Lawler's group, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, Jerry Lawler and Jerry Jarrett at the time. Mid-Southern, it was called.
Wow. And I know that Rochester, actually, you've had some major events in your life happen here in this area. Your fifth match in the WWF was right here in Rochester against Barry Horowitz. And even back then, the crowd, they knew you from World Class, seeing you on ESPN as the Dingo Warrior. And even back then, the crowd just loved you. They were enamored by the Warrior.
They took to it, yeah, from the very beginning. The WCCW TV from Texas, working down there at the Von Erichs, it came up here. In fact, I think we did one tour. That's when I worked with Bruiser Brody was around and Abdullah the Butcher. And then George Scott is a name that not many people will remember, but some will. When I was in Texas, he was, after helping Vince for a couple years get WrestleManias off the ground, he was going to Florida to retire. He was a friend of Jack Atkinson's and agreed to come down there and see if he could get things off the ground in Texas. And from that, I found out that he had a conversation with people up in New York, that there was a young guy down there that had a lot of raw talent that thought could really be something one day. And that turned out to be me. Shortly thereafter, George left, and I started negotiating to go to Japan. And I got a phone call to do a tryout match in Waco, Texas. WWF called me. They were going down there. And they thought that they would, they were real condescending and everything, of course. You know, they were the people that were in the position to make the decisions. But I went to Waco, and we'd been going there every 3 weeks. So the people went nuts down there for me more so than they did even WWF guys. And that led to some more shows and some more shows and some, you know, some paying some dues and some a lot of head games and stuff like that. Yeah, but that's... They liked it. I mean, in Texas, what had happened was when I went over there after leaving Bill Watts' territory, Kerry had that car accident where he ran in the back of the car and actually lost his foot, but they kayfabed it for a long time. And I went in as a heel, but there were so many similarities between me and Kerry, and physique-wise and looks and stuff like that, that they turned the character into a babyface.
Now, there's another urban legend about you that I want you to either confirm or deny. Is it true that you were the original person that Antonio Inoki wanted to play Big Van Vader?
No. No, I've never even heard that story. I thought you were going to ask me about whether or not I was the second or third or fourth or fifth Ultimate Warrior.
I heard that you were. He originally wanted you to be Vader, and then because you said you had negotiated to be in Japan, and then they gave it to Leon White, and as it turned out, it was your last feud in the WWF was against Leon White as Vader.
No, you know what? Nobody else has ever brought that up to me.
I guess that's why I'm the authority, right, Rich?
Yeah, I know. Either that or you just make stuff up.
Yeah.
Hey,
that's what the business is all about.
Now, how do you theorize the rumor about your death got started?
I have written about it before on my website. I think it mostly because of when I came back in 92. I left in 91. I was out for 8 months, and I came back at that WrestleMania. I don't know the number where. Did the rescue thing with Hulk, Sid, and I'd been living in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and had gotten involved in other projects, as I had done every time I took a break. I was always confident that I could do other things, and it didn't really keep my interest that much to maintain a type of look or anything, like the Ultimate Warrior in the ring. I got on doing other things. I always have been like that in my life. But I'd been living and gotten involved in a bunch of other stuff, and came back at a lighter weight. My hair was cut, and it took me a few months before I, you know, got back in tip-top shape. And I think that's the first thing. But then, you know, the mystery of disappearing and coming back and all the rumors and not having a platform to get my side of the story out, that's what kept it going.
You've said in your website and other places that your biggest match was the match against Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 6, where you unified the two titles. remember there's a story at Adam Copeland, who now wrestles as Edge. He said that's he was there that day and he saw you guys, and that's what made him want to be a professional wrestler. Has there any other guys that you know of that got into the wrestling business because they saw you wrestle?
I'm sure. I would say, in the most modest way I can, a lot of people did, because the Ultimate Warrior was a unique character that set a standard. I mean, if you look at my career since 91, I've been in the ring about 18 months. It's now 2004, and there's not a radio program, an internet program, or some type of form of wrestling is being talked that within the 1 second or third call, somebody asks, what about Ultimate Warrior? I mean, he had that kind of effect. But, you know, the legitimacy in my career has constantly been belittled, you know, and I don't pay much attention to it. It's just a fact. It's the truth. And my relationship with Vince, the way it turned out, and then eventually standing up and fighting against him in a 5-year legal battle and prevailing in that, it's not something that they want other people to know so much, the Ultimate Warrior. I mean, I get emails from people all the time. They play the videos at the television tapings, though, on the big screen of all the previous WrestleManias and stuff. Ultimate Warrior always gets the biggest pop, you know. And so they're not, they don't want to promote it any more than it already is out there. And, yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of people that were influenced by that character.
You're here doing a political awareness speech. Were you always political and outspoken even when you were in the WWF?
I was always outspoken, and I was always stood up for and against what I thought was wrong. And I may have not known exactly how to explain it in detail, but I knew when something was wrong, and I always stood up against it. That wasn't easy to do. I mean, you're working with a bunch of guys that basically have the opinion, you know, just, you know, bend over a little further or go down a little deeper. And, you know, I did a lot of self-mentoring. I didn't have any, you know, my father left when I was young. I didn't have anybody that I really could turn to get advice when I was going through those type of things. And but as far as politics go, no. It was after I took my first break from professional wrestling and I had a chance and realized that I was not just taking a break from wrestling, but I was taking a break from being in pursuit of goals. I'd been in pursuit of goals my whole life. I'd studied to be a chiropractor. I got into professional wrestling. That took up a lot of my time. I have little time for social interaction when I was on the road all the time. And then I took a break, and I realized that it never was the actual moment of the goal that made me happy. It was being in pursuit of goals. So I very shortly after that, I started setting goals for myself and some entrepreneurial projects, and I, you know, were very hands-on with those, and I started listening to other people and what they thought about life, you know, their philosophies about all kinds of stuff. I talk about it tonight. And it was very discouraging to listen to all the whining and complaining and what people thought that you know, how success sort of just magically happened, or you stepped into it or something, and you didn't have to work for it.
No, you did have to work for it. And one of the things that I always remember about your career, the kids. The kids loved the Ultimate Warrior. They were your biggest supporters. You're like a real-life superhero to them. Do you think that the wrestling business will ever get back to the place where the kids will be able to watch it again and say, you know, these are my heroes?
Well, I think, unfortunately, that young kids say those people are their heroes today, but the lines are so blurred anymore between, you know, all great storytelling depends on that there's a distinct line between good and evil, good and bad. And I think that's why people have a longing for that era when the characters were more like that. You knew who was good, you knew who was bad. Now everybody debate today across the board in entertainment, not just in wrestling, but rap and music and all kinds of stuff. Everybody's got the same attitude, you know. Nobody stands out from that, you know, that sort of generic I don't give a crap attitude type of thing. And I think that has an effect. I think the kids and young people bonded to the character more because of the concept warrior, not so much Ultimate Warrior. Warrior represents something to everybody, and it doesn't necessarily mean Ultimate Warrior, the painted-faced wrestler guy. It means something. You say it to somebody, and they have an image in their head of somebody standing up and fighting for something they believe in. And all the jargon that developed and evolved during my wrestling career, I didn't understand it as much as I do today, what can be done with it. But it made a connection with people that, yeah, man, I get that. I get so many people that write me these letters that they were little kids and they were the kid that was always beat up by people. They weren't competitive. They were always last in everything. And they watched The Ultimate Warrior and they would just tell themselves Ultimate Warrior wouldn't quit. I mean, I could tell you some stories that bring tears to your eyes, but yeah, it's unique.
have a two-parter here for you. When was wrestling, I mean, I know it bore down at the end of your career. When was it fun for you? And do you keep in touch with anyone from the business this day?
No. It was fun for me when I was pursuing the goal. People won't understand that they will if they take a moment to think about it. But, you know, an opportunity arose to get into professional wrestling because I was successful at amateur bodybuilding. One of my goals was to be a professional bodybuilder. I was living in Atlanta at the time, and it was a hotbed. And when I got in the business, I looked at it, and I saw what was going on. I took a step back, and I said, this is what's going on. They're going to start using guys with physiques. And I had all this knowledge and all this experience about how to build the best physique. And I knew that if I wrapped it up and didn't get hurt and wrapped it up into an energetic, intense character, that I could create my own spot in it. So I pursued wrestling as a goal. And obviously the goal, even when I was in California training for the few hours that I got, when we used to watch the black and white TV, Hulk Hogan was the best in the business. And when I reached that moment, it really was, and some people will, you know, be able to, will understand it, others won't. It was almost anticlimactic. I'd reached my goal. I'd done what I set out to do. And so I started setting new goals. What am I going to do? And that's when me and Vince really started having some outs about things, you know.
Now, WCW, we're all big WCW fans here. And I was wondering, how did the relationship with WCW all come about? Because when you came in, it was the highest rated Nitros that they ever had.
Yeah.
It was all built around yourself and Hogan and also with Page and Goldberg and his big push. And this other question is, are you sorry that you never got a chance to wrestle Bill Goldberg?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, in a lot of ways, because I think the one standard that the Ultimate Warrior set was the intensity. And everybody that came forward with an intensity, there was a natural comparison to those characters. Same thing with Goldberg. It's the intensity that they liked. And I was the guy that set that standard. And, well, they started contacting me. I think they did the renegade thing, thinking that I was sitting home with my gym bag and I was going to run back and say, how dare you insult me? No, I mean, that's how they think. You know, I think that was the psychology. I bet they really thought that I was going to feel so insulted that I was going to pick up the phone and say, you've got to let me come back. And I was doing my own thing. But eventually, halfway point in my lawsuit with Vince, I started talking with Eric Bischoff about coming back. And we had a different agreement. And you're right. I think what I did in that 15 minutes I was there was an incredible launching pad. But they were already falling apart. The organization was falling apart. We did a thing where I, you know, disappeared in a trap door. And then I didn't come out till everybody left the arena. And all Hulk and Bischoff and everybody was gone. But all the crew people were there, about 150 people. I came through back through the curtain, and everybody started applauding because they were excited about this launching pad. What I'd done was I'd gotten interested in reading, writing, and learning about philosophy and stuff, and Aristotle and good and evil and everything. And that 15-minute segment was, I wanted to take the Ultimate Warrior to a new level using that. I didn't have all the ideas. It would have taken a whole team. It would have needed to be tweaked. But I didn't see Hulk and Bischoff and those guys, and 3 or 4 days later I called up Hogan, and he goes, brother, you went over our heads. You know? But that... The production company, they have the ability to check the ratings every 15 seconds. For 15 minutes, the ratings went up every 15 seconds. And it's like they didn't want to have a powwow to figure it out. By then, entertainment, especially wrestling, they were just interested in how low they could go, not how high they could go. And I think that's what a lot of people miss, the work that's done to create uniqueness about storylines and stuff today. That's going to be none.
One of the things I got to ask you, that segment that you did with Hogan, you had one of the funniest lines I've ever heard. Ed Leslie was in the ring, and you looked to him and said, Hogan, who is that, your barber? Who came up with that line? I got to ask you.
It's all mine. I mean, you know, it's ad lib. Yeah.
That was great. That was great stuff. And then you did the same thing in Rochester. You also did the thing with the trap door. And a couple things with that I got to ask you. Number one, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, if that was when Davey Boy Smith got hurt, was that night, I guess he landed wrong on the trap door, and that started a lot of his physical problems. The other thing,
he was hurt before then. Yeah. Davey Boy was all messed up on drugs, and, you know, they ended up taking it to its ultimate conclusion. You know, no pun intended. They ended up ODing and doing stupid stuff. You know, everything about what I'm doing today, going out and mentoring in a different way and stuff, is about that when you reach a certain age where you are growing up, you got to think and act like it. There's a lot of stuff we see on the news all the time that disgusts us. And if people would just live by that simple principle that when they reach an age where they are a grown-up, they need to think and act like it. And a bunch of these guys that have died that I worked with, they haven't done that. You know, they've been in little budget hotel rooms doing their dirty little drugs and stuff, going out and wrestling in front of 50 to 100 people for $50. And I don't have any sympathy for that. I got kids, they're growing up in a world that's kooky. And I can protect them up to my property line. But beyond that, you know, there's a lot of danger out there and there's a lot of risk. And when I see people behaving like that, it's disappointing to me. It's disappointing.
I was going to ask you, where do you see yourself as politically when it comes to, you know, right, left, middle? I mean, a lot of people say you're extreme right. Do we agree with them? And is that where you feel?
I think people that criticize me don't know anything about me. You know, they bash me for what I got to say. But if you go to my website, I got about 700 pages there of nothing but intelligent thought. And people that go there are surprised. They're blown away by what I'm saying and the way I'm thinking about things and what I'm doing today. I think that's unfortunate. I talked tonight about those things. I mean, there's a distinction between philosophy and politics. I'm a conservative before I'm a Republican. And I don't like everything that George Bush is doing. So that's where I come down politically. But integrity is a priority for me. And the liberals today, I talked tonight about moral relativity. I think it's the greatest danger that we have in our society today is that stuff that isn't legitimate is just, or stuff that is illegitimate is just as legitimate because we got this blurred line. And it's all over the place. It's in entertainment. I talked about it at the beginning of this interview. But no, I mean, I go out and I make those statements when I talk to the crowd. Is that I'm a conservative before I'm even a Republican, but I'm not a liberal.
Do you ever see yourself running for political office?
No. No, I can do have a greater effect going out and doing what I'm doing. I can never compromise my principles.
Understandable. Last question. In your last run in WCW, you had a chance to team with Sting one time. I'm sure. Just tell us what that was like, because you go back with Sting all the way back to the beginning of your career.
Oh, I don't know. I really didn't give it much thought. You know, you know, we didn't maintain contact with anybody. When we were at Bill Watts working for him, Watts had a reputation for bringing young guys, especially big guys, bigger than him, that could really kick his ass. He had a reputation for doing things to them to prove a point. And they had given us Eddie Gilbert to manage us, sort of groom us and, you know, teach us and stuff. And we came back from a match one evening at a television taping, and Bill Watts wanted me to get down on all fours. He was going to show me how to work a kick, you know, kick me in the ribs or something like that. But he wasn't going to, he was going to kick me so hard he was going to break my ribs. He had a reputation for that. And I told him no. I said, if you want me to get down on all fours, you put me down on all fours. And I got a lot of heat from that, from Sting and from Eddie Gilbert, that, you know, I would never make it, you know, you're going to ruin your chance to make it in wrestling and stuff. And I've always been my own leader. I know when something is right and something is wrong, and I don't buy it for falling for it. And Steve was more of the type that he needed somebody to hold his hand. So we started splitting ways there, and I made some calls to Texas, and I took off. And that's really where we left it. We went different ways. I mean, I'm going to be prejudiced, but I think I'm prejudiced in all the objective ways. Ultimate Warrior was much more of a character than Sting ever was. I don't think Sting ever lived up to the character that he had with the face paint on. I think the greatest period that Steve ever had was when he did the baseball bat thing and they were building up for the Hogan match and he come down and didn't speak and he was in the rafters and stuff. And then when they had the match, it stunk. He didn't have what it took on the inside to come out and be the character. People will disagree with me. And, of course, he was groomed by Ric Flair. So he did more of the wrestling stuff and everything. That's what they did over there. But they didn't draw the kind of numbers, and they weren't as popular as WWF. I did what I had to do. People will, you know, even Bret Hart will, whenever he gets a chance, which is pretty frequently. Those guys were in the business for 10 or 12 years before I even showed up. And I didn't know anybody. But in 2 years, I figured it out. And
that says a lot for you.
Yeah.
Warrior, we want to thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Best of luck to you in the future.
Thank you very much.
Can we get a picture of side by side with you real quick?
Sure.